delve deeply enough into the issue of VAT taxes and how the Trump administration is viewing VAT taxes globally as just an extension of tariffs that nations impose. First, tell us a bit about the VAT tax and then what the Trump administration is saying about it.
Yeah, completely agree. So this is a comment from Peter Navarro, who has been leading on trade. So, and you heard it from President Trump as well. He said that Europe is very unfair in the way it deals with the U.S. because it imposes VAT on U.S. Exports, which of course makes it more expensive. So what is VAT? It's a value-added tax, the VAT. And a value-added tax is different than what most states in the U.S. have, which is a sales tax. So that's a tax on the final purchase. A VAT is a tax on every intermediate stage of production. So there is a VAT at the end, like a sales tax, but actually the VAT is charged throughout the entire process. So the entire production chain or the entire distribution chain. And if you consider that along with goods and services tax, GST, 175 countries in the world have this form of tax. So the U.S. is actually not in the majority because of the federal system. So the U.S. doesn't have one at the federal level, but there are sales taxes which differ at the state level. So what happens is in Europe, and all these other countries that have that, if you sell something into the European Union, then you have to pay VAT on it. It's just a sales tax. So what President Trump and Peter Navarro have singled out is they think that, and it's a hefty tax, it's about 20%, that's an unfair tax because it's going to make what Americans sell into Europe 20% more expensive. So they view that as an example of unfair treatment. And I think it's important to distinguish between what a tax is and what a tariff is. So a tariff is a tax specifically on something which is exported. So if you just look at tariffs, there's about 5,000 tariffs on trade between the U.S. and the EU, and the U.S. has higher tariffs than the EU on over 1,600 products. So in looking at that, the U.S. actually charges higher taxes on U.S. On EU exports than the EU does on U.S. Sales when you look at tariffs. But then if you widen it to say, well, tax regimes, VAT, is also an unfair tax, then that broadens it by a huge amount, and it would actually cover, as I say, nearly all the countries in the world. And I suppose one implication of this is if different countries have different tax regimes, which they do, unless you have a globally aligned tax regime, you're always going to have different taxes. So imposing, singling out basically a domestic sales tax as an example of unfair trade, that certainly goes beyond what how trade has been conducted before. And importantly, it goes against World Trade Organization trading rules, where you're supposed to be, you're not supposed to be identifying things like domestic taxes as a reason to impose tariffs on another country. It goes against the principles of international trade. So I think this debate has just been widened out hugely by raising that as a reason for why the U.S. should impose tariffs and why the U.S. is so concerned about the EU in particular.
So I wanted to talk about the WTO for a moment, because there are some pundits who are arguing that the WTO is dead in the water, that essentially the rules of trade that had been written over the past several decades have to be rewritten now as a consequence of all of this. Do you lend any credence to that, or is it too early to tell?
I think the WTO has real struggles. I think the view that it is ineffectual comes from the fact that the way the WTO works is they have these massive multilateral rounds, and the last vast round of negotiations to reduce tariffs was the Doha round, which was launched in 2001. That was deemed to have collapsed now almost a decade ago, and the WTO hasn't actually furthered another round of opening up of markets. And there have also been issues around Americans in particular, and this is under the previous administration as well, were unhappy with the overreach of the WTO, where its adjudication panel starts to make judgments about what other countries are doing. So I think for those reasons, the WTO has been viewed as just not having the impact that it should. But on the other side of it, the Director General of the World Trade Organization, who I do know, I think she has been pushing in two different ways. So the first is not going for a big multilateral round. So this is Dr. Ngozi. She's the former Nigerian finance minister, used to be very senior in the International Monetary Fund. So she's pretty well-versed in global politics, which I think you have to be when you run the WTO. So they haven't done the big multilateral rounds because that requires unanimity, so which is why these rounds stalled. You need every country to sign up to them, including, by the way, Russia. So pretty much, you know, 99% of world trade is covered by the WTO, and they just can't get unanimity. So what she's been doing is pushing for plurilateral efforts. So in other words, a group of countries that can further open up a market, like on services trade. So the WTO, a few years ago, improved the rules of trade for services, which is the fastest growing area of world trade. Services are things like broadcasting, things like education, and trying to set some basic rules around that. And the WTO has been successful in that because it worked with a group of countries. And then eventually the U.S. and China, which are normally at loggerheads, both came to the table and agreed those rules. I like to use that metaphor you hear sometimes in Brussels, which is if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. So both the U.S. and China were not originally part of the services market opening, but they decided it's gained so much momentum. If they're not at the table, the rules may not work for them. So then they signed up. So they've been making progress in that kind of way, which is why I think the WTO has done quite a bit in the last few years, just in a different way than what it used to do. But I think the current Trump administration's challenge to tariffs really challenges the very basic principle of international trade, which is all countries which are signed up to the WTO have to abide by its trade rules, and that includes giving the same the same treatment to all trading partners. That can't just be changed based on targeting taxes or something. It's called MFN, Most Favored Nation Status.
We're in conversation with Linda Yu, fellow in economics at St. Edmund Hall, Oxford University, and adjunct professor at London Business School. You know, Linda, I ask you this question just kind of anecdotally because you are on the other side of the pond and you are so connected. What is the chatter like? Are people afraid? Are they curious? What is the chatter around this upheaval of the world trade system?
I think there's quite a lot of concern, and you certainly hear it from policymakers, because what you don't want is uncertainty, and that's exactly what the current trade regime feels like, where you need to get announcements. You know, one day it's reciprocal tariffs based on tariffs, the day before it was on metals, the day before it was on supply chains. And remember, countries don't trade, companies trade. So if you start to challenge the way that trade rules, that companies have structured their supply chains, their distribution chains, how they access markets, what happens is that businesses start to hold back. They sit back and they wait and they don't invest, which means that they don't grow, they don't hire. And that's really challenging for a global economy, which is already struggling to grow. Because everything we discuss, when you impose tariffs or investment restrictions, it hampers business and then therefore hampers growth. So I think quite a lot of policy makers, as well as think tanks and certainly businesses on this side of the pond, are concerned that we're in for a few years of measures which can get announced may or may not happen, and that makes investment very difficult for businesses. And I think that kind of volatility might be good if you're a trader at an investment bank, but it's not great if you're a business trying to say, do I put my supply chain through Mexico? Do I put my supply chain through Vietnam? Do I put my supply chain elsewhere? Because both those countries have trade surpluses, and we know those are the target. So I would say most of the apprehension here is we are used to policies being well trailed. In other words, you know, policymakers tend to talk to the press, companies can tell them what's coming down the line, have some consultation before we make big changes to global trade rules. But that isn't how the current administration is going about it. And I think that's just created a lot of, a lot of concern and maybe a bit of sitting on hands.
You say a few years of change and apprehension. Is there any reason to believe that it would be just a few years? It seems like changes of this sort have very far-reaching ramifications. It would extend beyond that time period. Or do you just mean this is an adjustment period? Because, of course, like Brexit for the UK, there were a few years that were an adjustment period. But on the whole, you know, the UK is still functioning just fine. The economy is still humming along. Is it just a matter of a few years?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think, so Brexit, when the UK left the EU, there was some talk about going back, but pretty much that wasn't going to gain any traction. So you have a period of transition and then you settle into a new regime. Remember, Brexit was in 2016, so it's almost been a decade. So you're basically now adjusting to a regime where the UK, is a third country, which is what the EU calls all countries not in the European Union with its own set of rules. So I think the challenge with what's happening in the U.S. at the moment is it's not clear if it's structural or it's transitory, because this feeling that trade is unfair is quite deep-rooted. So, I think there's a slight frustration that some countries, like China, subsidizes credit, so that makes it easier for their companies to sell things overseas at competitive prices. There's frustration that even though the WTO has these trade rules, there's a lot of areas that we've discussed which are not covered. So services, for instance, not well covered, and there's a lot of non-tariff barriers. So there's restrictions that prevent, say, American companies from being able easily to sell into overseas markets. So trade is not free, and trade hasn't been fair. And trade is also not fair within a country. So if you look at the U.S. Rust Belt, the decline in jobs in the manufacturing areas, that is partly technological change as the U.S. moves into becoming more services economy, but it's also partly the China shock and other emerging markets beginning to manufacture what the U.S. haven't. The U.S. manufacturing, by the way, has actually picked up again, but manufacturing jobs have not. So, it's a number of factors, but trade plays a role. And we know trade always creates losers because the sector that you specialize in grows well. And then the sector, in the U.S.'s case, the Rust Belt, you don't specialize in, don't do so well. So it's also viewed as unfair unless you can do something to help those who lose. That is an underlying structural trend that's been going on for some time. And you often find that globalization, anti-globalization sentiment shifts. Because once you see that this is unfair, the question is, what can you do about it, and do you do something about it? So to me, that's structural. But I would hope, at least, the policy response, the volatility of it, I hope that is temporary over the next 4 years, because you can have policies that, say the status quo doesn't work, China doesn't change the subsidy policy, keep negotiating on the same thing won't work, let's try something else. But you need to trail that something else, make sure businesses and other countries know what's coming so they can feed in, they can be consulted, and then therefore you have less uncertainty. I do hope the uncertainty is transitory, even though the structural challenge to trade, I think, is pretty long-standing.
Linda, thank you so much for joining us. I've always deeply, deeply enjoyed these conversations. And I know our audience does, too. Where can we go to learn more about your thinking, to get your research?
Oh, thank you so much, Janet. It's always such a pleasure to come on your program. So you can find me at Linda Yee, that's L-I-N-D-A-Y-E-E-H, on social media, and that's also my website, lindayee.com.
That's Linda Yee, fellow in economics at St. Edmund Hall, Oxford University, and adjunct professor at London Business School. And a warm welcome now to Brian.